go.
Okay. It isn't very often that Tom comes down from the hill. And, you know, we're blessed tonight, and he's going to warm up for Jack. Tom, you want to come up here?
I'm Tom, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'll start off by saying, you know, that Jack must have wanted to get even with somebody in this room. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. And anything that I do say tonight, I'm only talking for myself. I don't represent AA or anybody, anything else. I just, only person I represent, myself. You know, I was taught nobody really speaks for Alcoholics Anonymous, we speak for ourselves. Anyway, that's how I was introduced to the thing. And I got to Alcoholics Anonymous the first time when I was 20 years old. I'd just gotten home from Vietnam, and it wasn't my idea. It was my mother's and the local barber's up in Springville. And like a lot of people talk about how they got to a certain point and all this stuff, and they went looking for recovery or Alcoholics Anonymous or something. They came after me. The Lieutenant Taylor down there at the substation, he made a deal with John, and whenever I ended up in the drunk tank or whatever, then John would come down and act like it was, he was doing an AA, H and I thing and that, but really what he was doing was getting to me to, you know, tell me how much I needed this thing. And I remember they came down, I was living at my folks, my mother's place, and the only reason I was there is because, you know, my mother, I felt like she was responsible, and my dad was working, he worked on the north side over there at Coinga, and he was Irish, and he figured it was just his curse. You know, that, this little bastard was his responsibility, you know. And, so that's why I was there. And, I remember they came down, John and Kenny came down, and they come down and they give this AA pitch to me. And we're not supposed to cuss in here or something, Rick said. Well, anyway, they had those little French windows in the deal there, and I remember, standing there, and I kicked four or five of them out, and I told them some bitches where they could go. And they could take their, you know, AA, whatever the hell. Just get the hell out of here and leave me alone. And that was my first real introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, then, so anyway, I got jammed up a few times, and to get my, I used to say I came for my mother. But I really didn't come from my mother. I came to keep the hustle going with my mother. Because she was always good for a few bucks, you know, $5 or something. $5, I could stay drunk all weekend playing pool and, you know, and messing around there in that little town. Beer was 30 cents a draft. And, you know, you let somebody kick your ass, they'll buy you beer for $4 or $5. But, and I remember, you know, so anyway, I agreed. I don't know. I needed money for fine money or something, and I knew the only place I was going to get it from my mother, I was going to do the time. So I agreed to go to this. They had a special AA meeting. There was three old guys in this little. It wasn't even the regular place. They had this. I found this out later, but they had this special AA meeting for me, and you know, I remember. You know, it didn't do much good, and well, it didn't do any good because I wasn't interested. But anyway, I went along, and 4 or 5 years went by, and I ended up in court, and they were going to give me a year, and then they decided they were going to give me 6 months. I think it was my third drunk driving, and then they decided, well, they had this new thing, and there was card carriers, and I'd had that little introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd been in jail a little bit, not a whole bunch, you know, and but enough to know that, you know, it really, at least for me, I didn't see any sense in it, you know. I mean, there wasn't much payoff sitting in jail, so they offered me this deal, and so I got this court card, and I had to go to 2 meetings a week for 6 months, and I figured, to hell, that's 2 hours a week versus sitting over there in this, you know, in jail 24 hours a day. That's not a bad deal, you know, but I mean, I wasn't coming here because, you know, I really wanted to get, I mean, I knew my drinking was screwed up, but I got to Alcoholics Anonymous over in Porterville there, and Porterville, Springville, and they weren't real hot on card carriers. You know, they basically, one guy come up and said, you know, you won't stay sober 90 days, and you'll be drunk again, you know, and I told him to, you know, where to stick it, and so anyway, I want to check this thing out, and what the court card did for me, even though a lot of people are against court card, what the court card did for me was give me a buffer. It gave me a buffer for those people out on the street that I ran with, and it gave me a buffer with you people in here. Because they could understand out there, the guys I drank with going to a couple AA meetings a week versus going to jail for 6 months. Well, they understood that, you know, they're not as... That's dumb, and I could come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I really wasn't one of you. I could sit in here because I was a card carrier, but I had a lot of, you know, they backed that up too, that I really wasn't one of you guys. And so that gave me that buffer, and I kind of got into this thing, and I had two things marked on the list at that point in my life that I just drew a big black line through. And that was people and God. And that's kind of a problem when you come into Alcoholics Anonymous. You know? I mean, it's God this, God that, and you gotta love everybody, and you gotta make friends. And I remember the guy that ended up being my sponsor, you know, he said something about friends, and I said, no, I said, if I wanted a friend, I'd get me an effing dog, you know? And, so I come to this thing for friends. And I wasn't big on the God deal either, you know? But anyway, I went along about six, and I kind of got into this thing, and all of a sudden I didn't have the court card, you know? That kind of kicked me off that, you know? Went in for the review and so I go down to the meeting in Porterville, and they used to have a podium like this, and I remember, they always insisted you kind of went up there, you know, because they called on you, and I said, well, I don't have anything to say, and old Doc Lou says, that's right, you ain't got a goddamn thing to say, but he says, you can walk up there, and you can say you're Tom and you're an alcoholic and then sit your ass down. And he says the day will come when you have something to say, and then you won't be scared to walk up there and face that podium. You know, they kind of screwy, but I went along with it. And I remember getting up there and saying, man, I'm coming to Alcoholics Anonymous on my own now. I'm not a card carrier anymore. Man, I was puffed up. The book talks about ego deflation, and after the meeting, he didn't wait till after the meeting. Unlike today, where it's attacking and all this other bullshit they talk about, he got up at the podium and he said, and he pointed at me and he said, you little lightweight, he says, what's the big deal about coming to Alcoholics Anonymous without a card? Now that you know you ain't got no goddamn choice, you gotta be here or you're gonna die. And I just kind of like, wow, that's not... So then he took me off the side of another meeting, because I like this attack and stuff, but he took me off the side and he says, you're so screwed up. He says, we're going to wait till you have a year of sobriety before we tell you how sick you are. He says, because you wouldn't be able to handle it otherwise. And I don't know why I tolerated this stuff, because, you know, like I was talking to Susan the other night, I was always a victim and got picked on. you know, I'd walk up and say your wife was a no good slut or something. Then you'd punch me out. And I said, well, geez, I got picked on. Beat me up for nothing, you know. And so anyway, I went along in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they kept rapping on the four steps. Every meeting I went to, and I remember saying, you know, Doc Lou asked me, he said, you taking your four step yet? I said, nope. He turned around, he just said, I don't want to talk to you. Just turn around and walk off. You know, I mean, a real asshole. And standing there, and they're talking about going to the Springville meeting, and he told four or five people, he says, you know, you come out to State Hospital and we'll ride up to Springville. You know. And they looked at me, and I had a world ten girls 10-speed bike. And he says, you ride your bike out to the hospital and you can ride up with us too. Screw you, buddy. You know, so I went and got my own ride to Springville. Showed them. I went to Alcoholics Anonymous, showed up there, and so anyway, I mean, this was just kind of how it worked for me. And then I got to the point where things got better. They told me things would get better if you don't drink. And I went, you know, 6 to 8 months, and things got better. I wasn't going to jail, you know, I mean, and people weren't, you know, looking for me. And stuff, things did get better. But I hit a point where it happened just like Doc Lou said it would. I didn't get any better. I didn't get any better. He took me aside and he said, you know, he says, it's time to buy a ticket for the train or get the hell off. And I said, what the hell are you talking about? And he says, it's time for you to get a book and take the steps. He said, you know, and he said, and he was right. And that's when I, that's when Alcoholics Anonymous really meant something. I don't know, maybe people can go to meetings and do the activities and do all that stuff because they probably like people and love people and stuff. And, but if you don't, you know, anyway, so I did that. I did that, and then, so basically, you know, it wasn't, I went to a meeting and I said, it's a Monday night meeting over there in Porta. And I'd done my amends. I'd made all my amends, you know. And I was a proud son of a bitch. I'm a spiritual giant, you know. And I said, you know, and I told them all how I made my amends. And the next day I was up at the barbershop in Springville and old John says, you made all your amends, huh? And I said, yeah. He says, what, did you go down and make amends to Lieutenant Teller? I said, hell no, that son of a bitch don't deserve no amends. And then he went into some kind of deal. And then I started thinking about that afterwards, and he's right. You know, they're picking on people. I mean, they abused me. And I remember going in there, and I'd go up there and walk into the substation, and I said, you know, I don't talk to Lieutenant Teller, and I don't know who the hell I am. But when they went back there and told who was out there, I mean, he come rushing out there, and he was ready to take me in there, you know. And I told him, well, I was here. I said, I'm here because I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, you bastard sent me there. And I said, it seems to be working, and I don't want to get drunk, and part of this damn deal is I got to come in here and straighten my side of the street out with you. And he knew all about that, and John had already prepared him for it. And he started going into some about philosophers or some bullshit. And I let him know that I was cleaning up my side of the street. You know, I told him. I told him, I said, you know, I said, you're still an SOB. But I said, the thing is, I'm not going to give you the opportunity for you to exercise being an SOB on me anymore. And I'm cleaning my side of the street up. You know, and he laughed like hell. And I guess he couldn't wait till I got out there to call John up and tell him about the girl's hang dog that went in there. But consequently, things like that, and I stayed sober for
Hell, Phil, today, tell you the truth. But but I had a lot of fun in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want to talk probably too long. But anyway, I just wanted to tell one Jack and Sammy story because, I mean, it's funnier than hell in a way because, Sammy wanted to stick my ass out and dump my ass, but she didn't want, we were married at one time, you don't know, but before Jack. But she was has this deal about, it really didn't want to split up with me because she didn't want to lose a relationship with my mom and dad. And I told her, well, that wasn't how it worked with the McDonald's, you know. I said, they liked you, they liked you. If they didn't like you, they don't like you. Is that that goofy graph back there? God, yeah. But anyway, that's what they call names like that. I thought it didn't work that way. And she got hooked up with Jack, and I had a few people ask me, they said, doesn't that upset you seeing her and Jack together like that? I said, God damn, I go home. I said, I don't even believe in God, and I go home and pray every night that it works out. But the thing is, that's true too. But I went to work. I worked at the post office and went to work and it was after Thanksgiving weekend, and they asked me what I did for Thanksgiving. And I said, well, I said I went to Santa Barbara and had Thanksgiving dinner, a vegetarian dinner at this big function with my first ex-wife. And they go, really? And I said, yeah. You didn't go to your parents? I said, no, we were still legally married. Huh? I said, my wife and her boyfriend went to my parents. And they didn't believe me, but that's a true story, too. And Jack got along real good with my old man. And I got to admit that when my old man died, my mother died, Jack and Sammy were there, and I didn't have to go through all that bullshit alone. A couple of years ago, I got diagnosed with cancer, and I didn't know if my insurance was going to cover the first PET scan, and Sammy calls up and tells me, says, don't worry about it. I don't care what it fucking costs. I'll pay for it. And so, like I said, I don't have any friends. And I don't have friends. I have people I interact with on different levels, and it's kind of hard to beat the level of those two. You know? And then the other thing, and then I'll shut out my Jack lie to you for a while. But, for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, there was this fella, they always come to the club down in Visalia and all this stuff, and he'd always go on, my sponsor said, tells me this, my sponsor says this, this yet, this yet. And it was grass over there. And I couldn't take it anymore, and I said to grass, I said, I know what your sponsor said. He says, hell, I sponsor your sponsor. I said, you've been saying this stuff, what your sponsor says, this and that and that. I said, been around here 4 or 5 years. What I want to know is I want to know what the hell you think and what you got to say. And he took that pretty well. But, and the only reason I do that is because, I thought he was goofier than hell, but I've listened to and got a lot out of people. I got more people in Alcoholics Anonymous that I don't like or didn't like than usually I get out of the people that I like, because they'll say stuff that I can really use. Most of the people that I like or like me or whatever, we kind of make allowances. We cut a little corner or something. But, that's why
because I don't know which one of you people in here, like I said, why you keep coming around. I haven't been coming around much lately, but why do you keep coming around? I don't come around. I've already dealt with my last drink. I've taken the steps, and I've cleaned up all the bullshit from the past, that I can recall. And I've taken care of the last drink, But like I told somebody here recently, you take a cat or a dog, and they'll go 4, 5, 6 years, and just stay in the yard, stay in the house or whatever. But all of a sudden, they'll just dart out and run out the street and get crushed, And that's why I keep coming back, is because of the darts. My dart. I don't come here for my last drink. It's because of the darts, which is going to lead to my next drink. I come around here and I keep contact with people, and I keep, I keep doing this stuff, even though, I don't like very many people, and I really don't. And I'm not a very nice guy. Most of the stuff I do because, if I don't, it costs too much not to do it. So, but I keep coming back because the one thing I do want to do is I want to stay sober. Okay. And I don't really care about dying sober. Dying, you're dead, so what difference does it make? But as long as I'm going to live, I want to be able to live inside my skin with myself. And for me, that's the most important thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, is that it's allowed me to do that. Anyway, that's enough out of me. Probably ran over, but... Okay, everybody knows we're in for a great treat. I think that was probably the most profound 10-minute speaker I've ever heard. And Jack's not going to like this, but I'm going to introduce my best friend, my sponsor, and a legend in his own time, Jack.
My name is Jack, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm not real sure. Listening to Tommy is real important to me because Tommy's family, and it's kind of like I spend a lot of time with him, and it's kind of like what goes on inside his head is a whole lot of what goes on inside my head. I can follow him. I can spend hours. And I'm not sure that's a good thing, but it is real comforting, and we have Sammy in common, so that helps. And he was especially right in the fact that I did want to come and piss people off, and that's really true. A lot of you people that know me know I'm really full of myself, and I really think a lot of myself. And believe it or not, it's worse now than it was. There are three people in this room who knew me back then, and it truly is worse now than it used to be. But because drugs and alcohol. Oh, and I'm going to talk about drugs. I'm going to do all the no things. I'm going to swear, okay? Because I come to AA. I didn't come to AA and get my virginity back. None of that kind of stuff happened. And it's true. I work at a school district, and I know how to go into rooms and not swear and not do that, those kinds of things. But when I come to AA, that's home. That's where I can be. And those of you that have been to the spent time with me at the Monday night men's meeting, I literally, well, and even in open meetings, sometimes I just come in and vomit on the table. That's what I do. And it doesn't make a lot of sense, but the point is that's part of the process that keeps me sober today. 25 years I've been sober, which, that's such a long goddamn time. And I had absolutely no intention of coming here and getting sober. I'm truly what you call a fake it till you make it guy. I walked in these doors, I kind of knew that I didn't think I had an alcohol problem, and by the way, I did not walk into these doors. I came into here through professional intervention. The Tulare County Narcotics Task Force, for the third time, extracted me from my home with a SWAT team. Okay, and it's like, you know, when the SWAT team hits your house and not, you know, and got you down on the ground, and I'm yelling, screaming for a warrant, and they're saying, "Shut the fuck up, Ramsey. You know the drill." You know, it's like, you know, it's just, you know, it's not, you know, it's silly. It was really time. And I'll never forget, I ended up in Tulare County Jail, and for the first time called my bail bondsman and said, "Don't bail me out. I'm just too tired to do it. I just can't do it anymore." And my career before that, and I'll touch on it real briefly, because really I like to glamorize it, because, you know, I do. I really like to glamorize it, because all, you know, and a lot of it was true. And there's people in this room, you know, it's true. Because people saw the Colombians and all the different stuff that came through my house and the, you know, the trips to Miami, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But what I really want to say is, no matter how high up the ladder you climb, you end up doing errands for the connection. That's the bottom line. That's what everybody does. Everybody ends up doing errands for the connection. And that's, you know, that's what happened. And so I got here, I had pled to this deal to go. I had a pretty reasonably beatable case, believe it or not. And I pled to this deal, and I didn't want out. And my dad came to me and said, "You can, if you go to this recovery home, I'll bail you out." And I said, I literally told him to go fuck himself. I said, I'm going to prison. I know the consequences of what the hell I've been doing all this time. Those are the rules. If you can't do the time, don't do the crime. Simple. But this little gal that I married in the visiting room, because I was on my way to prison, okay, talked me into going. Said, "Well, you can go to this recovery home, and you know, and then after 30 days, you can get out, and we can be together again." Well, that sounded pretty good, you know, because it's all about me. So I said okay, and I ended up going to this recovery home, And I didn't have a problem with alcohol. I walked into these rooms, and I'll never forget one of the first rooms that I walked into, and it's just, you know, it's just a bunch of lame sons of bitches. You know, it's just this, all these, a room full of these lame, because I was hip, slick, and cool, and I knew how to do this, and I could fly to Miami, and, you know, and I bought cars with, you know, horses and things with, out of paper bags, and done all this other kind of stuff, and I didn't have a problem with alcohol. I probably had this little problem with dealing drugs, and maybe I wouldn't do that anymore, but I certainly wasn't alcoholic, because my goddamn father was alcoholic, and I wasn't, you know, that I'm not an alcoholic. And I sat in these rooms, and I did the magic thing. I did, you know, 30 meetings in 30 days, or 90, it was actually 90 meetings in 90 days, and after 90 meetings and 90 days, I still didn't want anything you lame sons of bitches had. Okay? But the point is, I mean, I'm still pretty full of myself, but I figured out that at that point in time, maybe what I had wasn't working very well, and maybe I'd give it a chance. So I was a card carrier for 2 years. I came back here and carried a card, did all this stuff, and for the first time in my life. And to give you an example of how I operated, the guy that ran the recovery home, I don't know if you remember, he's the guy who did the sleeping dragon in the movies back that they showed in the recovery homes years ago, Chuck somebody. And he ran this recovery home. And I'd been there 45 days, and he goes, "How in the hell am I in this recovery home, my recovery home, and I can't get a roll of toilet paper without going through you, Jack?" You know, and it's just some control issues. I was still hustling, doing stuff. I came in to hustle. I was gonna do this thing. I was gonna do a fake it till you make it, and if I did this, maybe I didn't have to go to prison. Well, they lied. you know, they told me a whole lot of things. They said if you, you know, but they, I went to prison. 2 years later, I ended up going to prison. So no big deal. I had the time coming. The room was filled with a whole bunch of people like that, and like this here right now, and they just couldn't believe I was supposed to go to, I was going to prison. But, you know, I had five previous arrests, and the last year that I was alive, not even John Hollis would come see me. You know? And, you know, and I was living with a guy who ended up going down on a bunch of multiple murders. So, you know, it just like what wasn't so hot. But I still really didn't think I had a problem up until I was forced to work the steps. Until I was absolutely, I had this sponsor who just got tired of me pissing and moaning because I can talk. You know, I can talk my way into damn near anything. And the worst part is I believe my own lies. Where was I? I'm like, Yeah, I believe my own lies, but he made me work the steps. So he got to say, I'm not listening to you talk anymore, Jack. So, you know, no, you have to bring it to me in writing. For the first time, I sat down and I actually wrote a four-step. And to be honest with you, I'd done a four-step in a little recovery home. But to be honest with you, it wasn't a four-step about me. It was about my wife, you know, who the gal I met in the visiting room because I was losing her. She kept OD in after I got out and a whole bunch of other things. And you know, and I could live with that and not drink, believe it or not, and not use. And she finally, she left me because I had nothing to offer, you know. And God bless her, she was a good, honest human being. But when I met her, I was a drug dealer, and after I cleaned up, I really didn't have anything to offer, but I didn't know how to let it go because I was still controlling things. I was still running things. I was still calling shots. I was still doing all that kind of bullshit. Just up here. Not in reality, but just up here. So I ended up working the steps over her. And I saw that it really wasn't difficult. I just had to start writing about it and then taking it to someone, sharing it with someone, and then working, you know, doing an honest fifth, you know, four-step, fifth step, sixth step, just the whole process. Don W. was the one who probably helped me out at the extra meeting more than anybody, but just by going, it's this simple, Jack, and then he'd take me out behind the Sunday meeting in Exeter and work another step. It was just real simple. And consequently, today, 25 years later, I still do a lot of inventories. You can ask Sammy. I sit down and just type away and do stuff, and some of it I share and some of it I don't share, but I still bother to take, and everybody in this, a lot of people from the men's meeting heard, I take the magic pen, and once you put it to the paper, then the insanity that goes on inside my head gets real. Okay, and I look at that and go, "Well, I'm not telling anybody that." or that's insane, because I look at it the next day and go, "That's not real." And most of my first sets of inventories, the first couple of years, were like that. They really were. And consequently, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the process of working the steps has given me freedom I could not imagine, absolutely could not imagine. And I have learned how to be a productive member of society. I haven't changed that much. I'm not trying to talk to the newcomer. I'm trying to talk to some of the people who've been around a long time. I really haven't changed that much. I still am an old, I still think like a criminal and think like a convict. I'm just one of those people that believes that you can't do the time, don't do the crime. So I don't do the crime. I work with normies. I work with honestly good human beings. I work with this lady who does all the right things and goes to, you know, her whole focus is her kids and does things for all the right reasons. Okay? And I marvel at it because I'm just a man who's fearful of the consequences. So I have learned how to act proper. I still think, 25 years later, as a productive member of society, when I go to a concert, I still look at the best way to, how in the hell can I rob this place? You know, and what kind of crew will it take to do it? Okay, and that ain't going to change. I'm 60 years old. And the best part is Alcoholics Anonymous, because they told me, they said, you can think, you can live your way into proper thinking. You know, well, my thinking hasn't changed. But I talk to people and they go, oh, well, you're a nice guy. Well, Jack, I'm really, you know, and I look at them and kind of snicker, because I'm really not a nice guy. It's in my best interest to be nice to you. That's how much, you know, that's how I really am. It's in my best interest to be nice to you. When I went to that recovery home, the first thing that guy said to me was, you've been diagnosed with sociopathic tendencies, don't worry about it. And to be honest with you, the first 2 years I was so embedded in AA, and I was going to meetings every day, and I was doing all that stuff that I was given directions by the group, and it took me a long time to get to God. You know, the whole God thing came really a long time later, Yeah, the direction by the group, but more than that, there's too many things, and again, I'm actually excited. I get up here, I want to talk about some things that kind of go on inside my head, but I'm also fearful about it, because as much as I really want and crave your attention, you know, I want that, I want you to be liked, I could really give a fuck if I spend 2 minutes thinking about it. You know, just in 2 minutes, I go, I fucking don't need them. You know, it's just, you know, this is AA. I mean, because they're really AA. We're, you know, we sit in these rooms and talk and pat ourselves on the back for being winners, but we're fucking a bunch of losers, you know. I mean, you know, we didn't come here on winning streaks, you know. And it doesn't mean anything negative. It's just kind of, I'm just explaining how Jack's brain thinks, you know, and how I can talk through the process. It truly is still about me. But what's happened is I've learned to be comfortable with it. I've been married to Sammy almost 20 years, and I've told her this many times. I honestly didn't know how to be a husband. And to be honest with you, this is my fifth marriage. Okay? This is my fifth marriage. I've been married 3 times in recovery. Okay? But this last one is for 20 years. And finally learned how to love unconditionally. Okay? But Sammy didn't teach it to me. She's a bitch. I adore her. She's needy and all those other kinds of things. I had a dog that I took care of for 16 years. And I'm just being honest. Okay, that I took care of for 16 years, and I loved that dog, and that dog unconditionally loved me. And through taking care of that dog and nursing it through, I mean, had pancreatitis a bunch of times, a bunch of other things. And through that process, I learned how to unconditionally love my wife and love my daughter and love my granddaughter. And that's a true story. I mean, because 10 years ago, I didn't know how to be a husband. What I knew how to do was back the play. Because that's what I've always done. That's an old convict thing. I know how to back the play. It's honorable, you know, and I know how to do that. So being with her, you know, and doing the right things was just backing the play. But it wasn't until just a few years ago I learned how to love unconditionally, you know. And truly, a lot of, you know, and that's been a revelation to me, unconditional love. Because I love a lot of people in these rooms. I don't respect everybody in the rooms, you know. That's how it is. Now, I don't like saying that in a room like this, because this room. See, I came with the intention of really being an asshole, and you guys have fucked it up for me, because there's a whole lot of people in this room that love me, and it's real hard, because I really wanted to rail at some bleeding deacons, you know, for some of the stuff that goes on in AA, and I'm a bleeding deacon. I want it done my way. If anybody goes to the men's meeting, they know, you know, that's how I don't want any fucking change at all. Yeah, it's kind of like an acid trip. I did take a lot of acid in those days. And I learned a couple things along the way. I've always done service, and there's a lot of people in this room that I've drugged into service, because service was a good escape, for, you know, and it's a good way. Because those that do service stay sober. That's a true story. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And I did all of those things that they say in the book to do. Not because I wanted to, it's because I found cranky old sponsors that you know, Bill Lindbergh is the best example of who drugged me off to more 12-step calls than you could shake a stick at 5 o'clock in the morning nonstop, you know, and made me go out to the different institutions and do all that stuff and help spread the word of Alcoholics Anonymous, at least, you know, plant the seed, you know, do that kind of stuff. And those are, and again, really not willingly, but what I did is I found a sponsor that had something I wanted. And he was crazy as a loon. He and his wife fought nonstop, which is what Sammy and I did in those days. So, two people really headstrong. And Bill and Dottie fought nonstop. Dottie ran the central office, and they fought nonstop. And they've been sober. They died 40-some-odd years sober. And I said, okay, you know, they have what I want. I can go for it. I can relate to that. To change, and I wrote a list of stuff because I can't keep track, because oftentimes I'll come up here and just speak for 15 minutes and say a whole bunch of funny things and do that. And my normal story, you know, can be like that. I'm just tired of telling the same old stuff and glamorizing my drug, you know, my drug sales and all that other crap. It's not something I'm proud of today. Even though in some circles I'll wear it like a badge, don't you? I'm a chameleon, I'm a con artist, I'll walk in and wear it like a badge when it's appropriate, you know, because that's what I do. The other thing that is incredibly appropriate to me, absolutely appropriate, that this is April. Because April was Dedicated John's birthday. Dedicated John is truly... And many of you people who knew him was one of the most broken toys. Because I describe us in AA as broken toys. And he was one of the most broken toys I've ever known. The man did like this nonstop. He was schizophrenic and bipolar. And he saw things all of the time. And if anybody had the right to drink himself to death, he did. And he didn't. He died sober. He absolutely died sober. And part of the, I get, you know, and I would call on him in every meeting. I know I pissed some of you people off. Because I would call on him and he would always talk about the same issue. He would come up and vomit on the table just like sometimes I need to. And it was the same issue, so it was all boring to us because we wanted somebody like me to come up and say something cute and say something funny. But it was deadly serious to him, you know, and I would call on him every time because it was through these groups in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that he managed to actually pass in peace and sober. And he was my hero for many, many years. Because I'm one of those people. I love alcohol. I fucking love it. If I could do them right now today, I would. Okay? I absolutely, it saved my life. Alcohol saved my life, kept me from blowing my head off for the first, you know, 35 years of my life, because it took all of the antics and all of the, what I call the rummies to go rattling away at my brain all the time, and it made them go to sleep, gave me a little peace. You know, it did that. And I'm too narcissistic to actually blow my brain up, but drunk enough I might fuck up and make a mistake. You know, no, feeling sorry for myself, it might have looked like the right thing to do, you know, because in my right mind I know that, you know, because it's not that I think I'll miss anything, I'm just pretty sure you people need to hear something I have to say. And the other part, I know how to make fun of myself. I know how to make fun of the crap that goes on inside my brain. But I'm not going to lie to you and tell you that I've become a spiritual giant and that I know how to, you know, do this stuff. Yes, I have God in my heart. I'm a real believer in Christianity. I'm very, actually, pretty reasonably religious. You know, I swear and I do that kind of stuff. But it's different than than the tremendous amount of faith that I have. You know, that things will be okay and that I'm going to a better place. And that's a really easy thing for me to say. But the honest truth about Jack is that my spirituality is directly connected to how much money's in my checking account. You know, and that's just a true statement. And the rest of it, I mean, I haven't reached that nirvana. And I've worked with steps a lot of different times. And maybe it's because you know, maybe it's because I hustle a lot and I'm casting. And, you know, I don't really know, because there's times I'd like to give it all up. I've lived both with many things and quite well to do, but actually much more well to do. Well, no, nah, not really. But I've lived quite well to do. I've lived quite large and lived quite simply, and I don't really know the difference, except there's a hell of a lot less stress when I live simply. Was a hell of a lot easier for me. But I ain't giving up the shit I got. Not without a fight. Broken toys, losers, I've hit all that. Bleeding Deacons, which I'm one of them. Mostly the swearing thing, because I'm invited to speak some places and I can't swear, and it's hard, because AA is my safe haven. AA is the place where I'm accepted no matter what I do. And I always talk about drugs. Sponsorship. Sponsorship is probably, I always have a sponsor. And I have friends. I'm going to talk. When I call someone friend, I mean it forever. It means sometimes I don't want to see you. Okay? That's, you know, sometimes I don't want to see you destroy yourself. My friend Foster Rosen did that, came into these rooms and died. I had to say, you know, I loved him dearly, and I had to say, no, I just can't be around you while I'm watching you die. But I say friend, I call him friend. Jen's a perfect example of someone that a lot of people just couldn't be around, and I loved dearly. And then after she died, we made a saint out of her, and the people that come in these rooms that can't stop drinking, it's hard to judge their pain, man. It's really hard for me. It's hard for Jack to judge their pain. She, you know, basically committed suicide. I have no right to judge someone else's pain. And I'm happy for her. I went and saw her just a couple hours before she died. It's the most peaceful I'd ever seen her. And I knew her from the fucking old days when it wasn't good. It wasn't good how she was treated. It wasn't good how she lived. And I reach out. I mean, as a matter of fact, it's real funny, because we threw someone out of meetings and a whole bunch of stuff about a year or two ago, and the first thing I did was go call that son of a bitch and ask him to be my sponsor, you know, because the way he is what you see is what you get, and sometimes being a sponsee is more important than being a sponsor. Sometimes being there for somebody else is more important. And if it really comes down, you know, I don't know. That's an important thing that I don't take lightly. And I still see a lot of my friends that drink and use. Now, if you're new in this program, I do not advise doing that. Do not go around the people that you used to hang with that drink and use. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. But I went to prison and managed to not drink and use when my cellie was shooting heroin and was a heroin dealer. You know, so I know that I can be around that stuff and not drink and use. Sammy and I love to go to Las Vegas and neither of us drink or gamble. You know, right? We come home winners every time. But I'm not afraid of the drugs and the alcohol, because it really was my best friend for a long time until it quit working. And when it quit working, God, what I'd give to turn this thing off just for 10 minutes. You know, I'm just not willing to take that first drink, because I know what would happen. If that old Jack could turn on, and he'd be fucking out of here. You know, it's like I'd be off and running, and I don't stop until he put handcuffs on me. No ifs, no ands, buts about it. Because I tried to stop for a lot of years beforehand and couldn't. I used to sit in the house and it'd be two beers in the refrigerator. And I wouldn't even go. Sometimes I'd wake up after a long 4 or 5 day run, and I'd go ahead and see the two beers, and not pick up the first beer, and not take that beer, and sit there for a couple of days, because I knew once I picked it up, I was aware of this a couple of years before I quit drinking, that once I picked that beer up, I did not know where I'd end up. There was no way to tell where the hell I'd end up. I had no control over it. And, you know, I talked about friends. because there are people in this room that are that truly I consider friends. No ifs, no ands, no buts. And this room is filled with a whole. I have friends that are actually pathetic, some suspicious, and I have friends that I respect. And this room happens to be filled with a whole lot of friends that I respect. And you know how lucky I am for that. You know, that's amazing. I talked about love and Sammy. I talked about Sparky and taking care of the little dogs. And how to do the right things for the wrong reason. Sammy used to harp on me all the time. He'd be like, what's your motives? Why are you doing that? My fucking motives are all bad. It's like, it doesn't make any difference, you know. But the program of Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me consequences, has taught me how to have a conscience of sorts. And has taught me that even though I think wrong, doing the right action actually brings me more pleasure. I don't know if that makes sense, but doing the right thing brings me more pleasure, makes me happier. That's a big change. That's only happened really since Sparky died, since taking care of Sparky. Virginity, because I didn't come back in and get my virginity. Spiritual well-being. It's all about me. Nice people, afraid of consequences. The steps. 12-step calls. Jan, man, I really kind of have it all. The rest of it I can. Now it's kind of at the point where I'm searching a ship to say. And that's really not valid. At that point, I can go into some spiel, the canned spiel that many of you have heard me say before, that, you know, that's just the stuff, and talk to the newcomer. But what I'm really glad about is being in a room like this with people that I love and people that I know, and that I can actually come up here and vomit on the floor and talk about even 25 years later how sick I am inside my head. And even though I found peace with that, it's like the mental illness or whatever. Sammy tried to have me, you know, sent me to a couple of psychiatrists and stuff like that. Once or twice, because I'm hyper and I think like an acid trip and do all of that other kind of stuff. And the doctor said, is there anybody else that wants you to be medicated besides your wife? And I said, no, I don't think so. And for a lot of years, since I was a kid, I've been going to psychiatrists in reality, because I've always really kind of had a problem, but I didn't want to lose control, and I don't want to take anything so that I don't want to lose my edge, because it's my edge that keeps me moving. It's that edge, the stuff that goes on inside my head. I don't sleep a hell of a lot. I really don't. You know, and I don't know why I needed to come self-disclose in a speaker meeting, but it felt right because I felt so uncomfortable for the years in between. About, I would say, after Bill died, so in between about 12 and 17 or 12 and 20 years, I was actually, no matter how many inventories I did, no matter what it is, I was actually uncomfortable in my own skin. You know, I really, because sometimes when I say things like this in open meetings, they look at me like I'm crazy, you know, and I guess I am. But the program Alcoholics Anonymous has turned me from really a career criminal into a productive, kind of exceptional member of society. You know, in reality, I take a lot of myself, but I get a hell of a lot done. At the college where I do a bunch of work, the chancellor, I've spoken to him about it, and I said, you know, it's like I take direction. That's the thing. I've learned to take direction. I've learned to take direction from other people. And so I've learned how to take my God-given talent as a con artist, because I am a confidence man by definition, when I can make things, everything okay, and do really good things with it. But as long as I don't listen to Jack's direction, as long as I take a group consensus and I talk to a lot of people, you know, and people that know me know I do that all the time. It's just the right direction. What am I doing? Where am I going? Does this make sense? Am I wrong? Tell me if I'm doing something wrong. I'll change it. even in my business. I have the last say. No, Sammy has the last say. But I really learned to open up and listen to other people. I've actually learned, rather than tell people how to do things, to ask them how they want to do it. And then, I learned this from an old lady on a dying bed. She said, young people come to you and ask you what they want to do, ask them what they want to do, and then advise them to do it. But I hired young, brighter people than me today, and then I asked them how they want to get that done. And oftentimes they have better ideas than I do. It's probably why I've learned to be successful. Because I'm even willing to take directions from people that don't know as much as I do. I have this philosophy. It's kind of interesting, and I don't know if it's valid to even talk about. Yeah, it is, in an AA meeting. My younger brother is developmentally challenged. In the old days, we called it mentally retarded. And I lived in the same room with him. I believe that everybody in the world's basket is full, like ping pong balls. And everybody's born with a full basket. And because I have a bunch of these intelligent ping pong balls in there, my little brother has kindness and goodness and niceness. So his basket's just as full as mine, just filled with different ping pong balls. And we're all like that. We're all broken toys. We're all dedicated Sean's, little pieces of it. We all have little pieces of that in us. And none of us are better than each other. Even though I want to fucking judge you every day. Okay, you know. And I've learned that. I've learned that through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've learned how to take that thought and turn that into the right way to treat people. Even though I just as soon as you walk out the door pay somebody to beat you over the head sometimes. You know, I've learned how to act right. That's about it. Thank you very much for letting me come vomit on the table.